from the Palais de Justice in Paris. In the past 19 hours of this 16th day of October 1793, or according to the calendar of the infant French Republic, the 24th Vendémiaire of the year 2, CBS has been reporting the trial of Marie Antoinette, who is charged with treason against the people of France. It is 4 a.m. here in Paris, a grim, cold morning, and we've just been informed that the jury, which will decide the fate of the queen of the beheaded Louis XVI, is ready to render its verdict. The jury still hasn't entered this hall of audience, but is reported on its way. For 19 consecutive and grueling hours, Marie Antoinette has been upon the stand, facing a charge of treason. In a few moments,
October 16th, and the jury, 1793, Paris, you are there.
The verdict in the trial of Marie Antoinette. CBS takes you back 155 years. It is 9 months since Louis XVI went to the guillotine. The people of France face a grim but inevitable decision. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there,
you are there.
You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now,
the Great Hall of the Palace of Justice and John Daly.
Are all rather weary. It's been a long, grueling experience. This great hall is lit only by two dying candles. They are small candles sputtering in their stands, and our eyes are weary of peering into the darkness, trying to distinguish faces and figures, great and small. In this macabre light, the 300 men and women assembled here appear like long-shadowed ghosts. They are tired ghosts, wearily awaiting the pronouncement of death or life for the widow Capet. The public prosecutor who has been conducting the case of the people versus Marie Antoinette has just come into the hall. He's walking in this direction. Sir! Sir, perhaps, well, Monsieur Fouquier-Tinville.
Citizen Daly, you have been in France long enough now to know that we no longer use the word Monsieur.
The leader of the Jacobin Party, the Revolutionary Party in France. The two men are talking now to my right. For the front rows of spectators here in the Palais de Justice. The famous furies are still in the two front rows. They haven't moved from their places even during this recess. They're still knitting. Let's see if we can get one of them to speak up. We've described this group of revolutionary women before. They're always present at the executions of aristocrats, counting the heads as they fall in the basket below the guillotine. Here at the trial, they have freely taunted Marie Antoinette and commented furiously on the testimony of witnesses. Madame, what verdict do you expect? Quel verdict croyez-vous que la cour va prononcer?
J'étais une mère. Je tricotais pour mon fils des chaussettes chaudes pour l'hiver. Mon fils est mort.
The citizeness has just said that she was a mother who once knitted warm socks for her son for the winter. Her son was murdered. Qui a assassiné votre fils?
Il était étudiant en médecine. Il est venu avec une délégation parler au roi. Une délégation qui se conduisait bien. Qui était polie, respectueuse. Madame Veto a ordonné à la garde suisse de tirer sur le peuple.
Madame Veto.
Et ses amis l'ont ramené à la maison. Je ne pouvais plus reconnaître son visage. Je ne reconnaissais plus mon propre fils.
The citizeness adds that her son was a medical student who came with a delegation to talk to the king. Marie Antoinette, she says, ordered the Swiss guards to fire on the delegation, and when his friends brought her son home, she could not recognize his face. Merci, citizeness.
Sa propre maman ne pouvait plus reconnaître son visage.
C'est affreux. Vous avez mes sympathies. The jury has still not returned. Monsieur, or I should say, Citizen Fouquier-Tinville, the prosecutor is still talking to Citizen Robespierre, but Don Hollenbeck across the hall has a police agent waiting to talk to us now, so let's switch to him. Go ahead, Hollenbeck.
police agent beside me is Martin Harel. He's a man of, about 35. He wears a sword and a pistol tucked into his tricolored sash. Citizen Harel, you speak excellent English.
Yeah, I learned to speak English in the salt marshes of South Carolina.
So?
Oui, I landed near Georgetown with the French army under Lafayette.
I see, a man of two revolutions.
Both fought for independence, citizen, independence from the aristocrats. And both fought with some success, no?
I've been watching you and the other police agents, citizen. You've all been mingling among the crowd, examining spectators, fingering your pistols and swords rather nervously. If you're so confident of your revolution, why is that necessary?
Oh, the revolution, citizen, is not won yet. France is an island of revolution surrounded by enemies. There is not a single foreign power which would not crush us if it could. Except, of course, your own country, and even there, the aristocrats in the court of King John Adams, we cannot expect sympathy from absolute monarchs, eh?
Well, our President Adams isn't exactly a king, citizen. We did elect him.
Oh, oui, but to all absolute monarchs, our revolution is a disease. Your revolution, too. And they fear that its contagion will spread like a plague over their princely beds. And that is why they are conspiring all over Europe. We, even in this courtroom, they are conspiring.
You mean there are aristocrats in this courtroom?
Mais certainement. No one can tell how many in disguise under the red cap of revolution.
But to what purpose? What can they hope to do?
Ooh, they may shoot Robespierre, the judges, the jury. And they may try to burn down the court to blow it up.
Just a moment, citizen. Excuse me, Citizen Harel. We've received word that Marie Antoinette has left the Conciergerie, the famous Paris prison, for this courtroom. Ned Calmer's outside the prison. He reports some kind of demonstration, so we'll switch to Ned Calmer.
By the Chevalier du Poignard, a secret society of royalist assassins, to abduct Marie Antoinette and save her life. There's an ugly incident going on here now involving a lieutenant of the guard assigned to Marie Antoinette. His name is Louis-François de Bune, a man well over 50. I'm going to ask him to tell what happened. Mon lieutenant, qu'est-ce qui s'est passé?
La veuve Capet est sortie de la prison. Les marches étaient glissantes. Elle risquait de tomber. Moi, je lui ai offert mon bras. La foule a trouvé que... On m'a assailli, on m'a frappé. Je n'ai rien fait, moi, je n'ai rien fait.
The lieutenant said the crowd attacked him because he offered his arm to the queen because the steps were slippery. They thought he was being too polite. A woman has just accused the lieutenant of giving the queen a glass of water and taking off his hat to her. He might have been seriously hurt by these angry Parisians. Apparently, they deeply resent any civility toward the old order. This is not the first demonstration against aristocrats or their friends. The streets of Paris are alive with men, women, and children. These turbulent hours, people are eating and sleeping in the streets, waiting for the expected execution of the former queen. Mr. Ned Calmer, I return you to John Daly in the Palais de Justice.
The jury has still not returned to this candle-lit courtroom, but a rumor is circulating that the court may decree exile for Marie Antoinette instead of the guillotine. This would not please most Frenchmen, as you've just heard, but there is a small group of men and women in Paris who are praying that the sentence will be exile. Ken Roberts is with these people now at Luxembourg Prison. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
Luxembourg Prison was once the ancient and renowned palace of Luxembourg. The king and queen lived here occasionally. They held splendid feasts for the aristocrats amid the gold of dinner plate and the sparkle of diamond necklaces. No sparkle of diamonds and roguish conversation here now. Now only the grim waiting for the doom of execution. The prisoners here are treated very politely. They are under no extraordinary restraint. And the sentries allow them to come and go as they please, within the walls of the palace and its gardens, of course. their friends can call upon them, and the prisoners can write and receive letters. One of the nobles has a dog in his chambers which he uses to fetch and carry messages and packages between this sumptuous prison and free Paris. There is even a confectionery stand just outside the walls for the convenience of those who are in the habit of giving sweets to their ladies. I'm in a sort of a game room now where the prisoners are chatting amiably, playing vingt-et-un and other card games. I'm sitting by a table where two men are engaged in a game of chess. One of them is the former Comte de Flers, who has agreed to an interview provided we don't disturb his game. Monsieur de Flers, how do you feel the verdict in the trial of your queen will affect you personally?
Oh, maman, attention à votre dame, mon ami, elle est en prison.
I just told my friend to watch his queen.
Now, what was it you wanted to know? How will the verdict affect me alone? Yes. What shall I say? If she's exiled, then perhaps it will create a very pleasant precedent, and I too will be exiled. On the other hand, if she will éternuer dans la sac, I too will éternuer dans la sac.
What does that mean?
Oh, it is the best joke about the guillotine.
Look through the little window and sneeze into the sac. Très macabre, n'est-ce pas? Macabre. Oh, you do not laugh, monsieur. Perhaps you do not like French jokes. Eh bien, I will tell you an American one. You see that man there writing. He is the most ironical joke of the French Revolution. He is your Tom Paine of your American Revolution. Oui. Tom Paine, the revolutionist in prison with the royalists. Ah, that is equality for you.
Fraternity, too. Of course, he will not speak to us. He is writing a pamphlet on the rights of man.
The rights of man. Why don't you speak to him?
He refuses to be interviewed.
Oh, perhaps he is ashamed to be in prison for his great mistake. You know, monsieur, that he is here in prison because he is accused of taking part in a scheme to kidnap the king to America and save his life, eh?
Well, Tom Paine has said in a pamphlet which he signed the Quaker that he had no love for the king. He said his aim was to gain humanitarian sympathy abroad for the French Revolution.
He said that is what he said, but what did Robespierre say? Robespierre said it was a Girondist plot to save the king and return him to the throne.
Well, perhaps, but it doesn't matter now.
Oh, oui, the king is dead. Long live the king. Je vous ai déjà prévenu une fois. Maintenant, je crois que je vais être obligé de vous prendre en parrain, mon ami. Voilà.
Dis, monsieur Robert, you can warn a people 1,000 times, but they do not listen.
I have just taken my friend's queen. Just like us, we aristocrats, we have been warned for 75 years. That if we did not stop our foolishness, a revolution would come. For almost a century in France, taxes, poverty, no bread on the tables of the poor, cake on the tables of the nobility, lettres de cachet, false imprisonment, a new spirit everywhere, and we could not understand it. Mon Dieu! People thinking, reading, and we. We tried to help, to improve conditions, to make reforms, but not enough. It was too late. Too late to save the revolution.
You seem to have a very sympathetic understanding of the revolution, Count de Flers. Why are you its prisoner?
One can understand the thing without being in favor of it.
Oh, were you convicted of any counter-revolutionary crime?
No, just counter-revolutionary thoughts. And that, monsieur, is a great mistake for kings or revolutionists. People should not be tried for their thoughts, eh? You in America know that. The people of France must learn it. To try people for their thoughts is tyranny. Your Tom Paine will tell you that the thought of man is not triable. Only his
There, May, the head turnkey of Luxembourg prison has just come. He has cried out, "Hello, citizens, I have the results of today's lottery." The lottery is the list of the condemned who will go to the guillotine this afternoon. The prisoners are silent. They've stopped playing their games. One woman is weeping. All eyes are on Bell. He's reading the list.
I'll speak by Joubert!
speaking to the
Père. Votre nom aussi se trouve sur la liste devant Comte de Flers. Et j'ai également des nouvelles pour votre adversaire, le général Aprevot. Oui, votre nom figure aussi sur la liste des gardiens. Il faut que vous terminiez vite votre partie tous les deux, car une meilleure partie vous
attend. He has just told the Comte de Flers and his friend, General Apremont, that they are to go to the guillotine today at noon.
Where? My friend and I have just won a prize in today's lottery. We will both sneeze into the basket. And now, if you'll excuse me, we would like to finish our game. Hello. Hello,
Thank you, Comte de Flers. The former Count has returned to his game of chess.
This is John Daly in the Palais de Justice. We have interrupted Ken Roberts because Marie Antoinette has just arrived. Evidently, the jury is ready to deliver its verdict. The former queen is in the anteroom. Don Hollenbeck is there now trying to arrange an interview. And here we have the French citizen who will be the widow Capet's final accomplice in death if the verdict is guilty and the sentence is the guillotine. He is citizen Henri Sanson, a young man, very tall, about 6 feet six or eight, I would say. He has a pair of barber's scissors in his hand, which he keeps clicking professionally. Citizen Sanson is the official executioner of France.
Citizen, not official yet. Soon, I hope, but not yet. You see, my father, Charles-Henri Sanson, was the official executioner. He died shortly after he executed the king, God rest his soul. My father, I mean.
I see. I take it, then, that you hope you will earn the official title that your father has.
But of course, citizen. And the execution of the widow Capet will help me on my way to that goal. It is my first important assignment. I want very much to do it as professional as my father would.
Why do you carry those...
My scissors. One of the tools of my profession. Used to belong to my father, God rest his soul. Excellent scissors. Sharp as the guillotine. I will use them to dress the widow's hair this morning. A short cut just below a white lace cap.
Well, then you are convinced that the verdict will be guilty and the sentence the guillotine.
Naturellement. I will take her in my charge. After the haircut, it will be my duty to bind her hand behind her back, comfortably, of course, right above the elbow. Then I will walk her across the yard, help her up the four rungs of the little ladder into the waiting cart. It is important that she does not hurt herself, so I will see to these little details myself. Hello. As the cart passes through the streets to the scaffold, she will sit facing the horses, and I and my assistant opposite her. Perhaps there will be a priest in the car, too. That is not my department. We will go down the Rue Saint-Honoré to the Place de la Révolution. And there, before the people, before the army, before my superiors, I hope I shall acquit myself as well as my father did, God rest his soul. The official executioner of France.
Thank you, Citizen Sanson.
Merci, citoyen.
Don Hollenbeck has been successful in arranging with the authorities for an interview with Marie Antoinette. He is now in the antechamber across the hall with the widow Capet. So over to Don Hollenbeck.
Marie Antoinette is still conferring with her consul, Citizen Transon de Corday, appointed by the state. She'll be with us in a moment. As we have described before, the former queen's hair has turned snow white in her year of imprisonment. Her once perfect oval face is marred by deep lines of sorrow, engraved since the execution of her husband and the removal of her eight-year-old son from her custody. Marie Antoinette, however, still retains a queenly grace and dignity. Some call it the haughtiness of a despot, others an air of insolent contempt for people beneath her. Her long white gown covers a full figure, which some call generous and dignified, others just generous, but no one can deny the beauty of her long hands that have been constantly in nervous motion during the trial, as if she were playing the harpsichord. Marie Antoinette is approaching us now. The queen is sitting down. Citizeness Capet, it's very good of you to speak with us. What are your thoughts now that the verdict is about to be rendered?
I think now as I have thought always. If the good people of France have left to them any dignity, which I believe they have in spite of the terror, they will make me free. For they know that I am innocent.
But if I may, Citizeness Capet, the prosecutor has said that you committed specific counter-revolutionary acts against the Republic.
That is not true, of course. The welfare of France is what I desire above everything.
What of the charge that before the Bastille fell, you urged your husband to hand over funds to the Emperor of Austria to invade France?
How could what came before the revolution be an act of counter-revolution?
Well, after the revolution, the prosecutor claimed that you wrote to foreign powers, especially to your brother, the King of Bohemia, urged them to form an international coalition against France.
The prosecutor did not prove a single fact. Yes, I wrote to my brother. But can nature or the revolution deny me the right to try to save my life?
Citizeness Capet, as you probably know, you are being called Madame Veto by many people because they say you influenced your husband to veto many humane laws passed by the Assembly. Would you care to comment on that?
My husband had much confidence in me, and that is why he took the trouble to consult with me. If it is for this I am called Madame Veto, let me say that I never took the liberty of making any observations upon anything he proposed.
About the charge that you ordered your Royal Swiss Guards to fire upon the people...
When law and order are in danger, it is the duty of a monarch to reestablish public tranquility. I was the wife of Louis XVI, and it became me to conform to his wishes. Circumstances are not always kind, especially to women born of royal blood. I came to this country from Austria 23 years ago. I was a child of 15. I did not wish to come. I did not wish to be the Queen of France. But circumstances willed that it be my fate. I am innocent now as I was innocent then, a girl of 15. To the terror that will forever be a stain of blood on the honor of France, I say, I was a queen. You have dethroned me. I was a wife. You have slain my husband. I was a mother. You have torn me from my children. Nothing is left me but my life's blood. Slake your thirst on it, but do not make me suffer any longer.
Thank you, Citizeness Marie Antoinette. This is Don Hollenbeck. Now back to John Daly.
We have been trying to check the rumor we reported earlier that Marie Antoinette may be exiled. And here is the man who more than any other knows whether or not it's true. The man is, of course, Maximilien Robespierre, leader of the Jacobins, the party in power. Citizen Robespierre, what about that rumor that you may spare the life of Marie Antoinette?
Marie Antoinette has had a fair trial. I say now, as I said 8 months ago at the trial of Louis, the greatest of criminals cannot be judged. She's already condemned.
You think, then, that Marie Antoinette is as guilty as Louis?
Just as guilty.
Well, what of her plea that she was merely doing her wifely duty, conforming to her husband's wishes?
If anything, it was the other way around. It was Louis who was the weakling. His wife wielded the scepter.
But Marie Antoinette protested in the trial that her actions were for the good of the people.
Observe, citizen, the eternal tendency of villains to connect themselves with virtue on behalf of the people. I cannot save the life of Marie Antoinette. A dethroned queen in a republic can serve only to disturb the tranquility of the state and upset liberty.
But, citizen Robespierre, what of the pleas abroad for a humane policy toward the dethroned queen to let her live?
Humane? The victory of the revolution will decide for the world whether we are scoundrels or benefactors of humanity. Of course, France and the United States are now out of step with the rest of the world. But virtue, friend citizen, was always a minority on earth. Let me speak a few lines of Voltaire. They are the definition and the hope of our revolution. Thou hast not given us a heart for us to hate, or hands for us to kill. Make us help each other to carry the burden of a painful and passing life. Let not the small differences between the clothes that cover our feeble bodies, between all our inadequate languages, between all our ridiculous customs, our imperfect laws, between all our silly opinions, let not all these nuances which distinguish the atoms called men be signals for hatred and persecution. Citizen, we have started on our way. The roads behind us have been torn up. We must go on, whether we will or no, and now, above all, is the time when we must say, we must live in freedom or die.
Thank you, Citizen Robespierre. The jury has re-entered the court. They're filing into their box. These men represent, by the way, a fair cross-section of Parisian trade. Citizen Garnet is a wig maker, Martin Nicolas a printer, Châtelet a painter, Grenier Cray a tailor, Antonel an ex-deputy, Souberry a surgeon, Trenchard a cabinet maker, Jodier is an ex-constable, and now Marie Antoinette has entered the court. She is walking directly to her place before the judge's bench. The president of the court is banging his gavel, and a hush falls over the court. And now the greffier, or clerk, has risen. He's facing the foreman of the jury. Standing, he's putting the question to him. Guilty or not guilty on charges of treason and fomenting civil war.
Primo, intelligence avec les ennemis de la France, dans le but de saper les fondations de la nation française. Secondo, participation à une conspiration ayant pour but de fomenter la guerre civile. Coupable, cela est notre chef.
Guilty on both counts. Marie Antoinette has been declared guilty by the jury. The crowd is on its feet, cheering the verdict, shouting death to Marie Antoinette. The Furies, the women of
October 16th, 1793. A people's court dooms Marie Antoinette, and the French Revolution moves on.
You have been listening to the trial of Marie Antoinette. Another broadcast in the series You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyon. The trial of Marie Antoinette was written by Joseph Liss and Mr. Cheyon. Marie Antoinette was played by Inga Adams, and the cast included Maurice Tarplin, Anne Shepherd, Joseph Conway, Francois Grimard, Raymond Edward Johnson, Jacques Aubuchon, John Merlin, Guy Sorel, Beverly Thurman, and others. Next week,
1184 B.C., the fall of Troy. You are there.
Those great geniuses for trouble, Amos and Andy, do it up in real American style tonight by tangling with a housing problem. Listen to them on most of these CBS network stations as the sly kingfish sells Andy a house and Andy finds he doesn't own the ground it sits on. That's the Amos and Andy Show tonight and every Sunday exclusively on CBS. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.